Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WUSA 9 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
An alarming number of Americans, 24%, have more credit card debt than emergency savings. But on the flip side, 13% have neither credit card debt or emergency savings. And that kind of startled me. Well, we're going to talk about this study. My guest is Greg McBride. He is the chief financial analyst for Bankrate.com. We're also going to talk about HELOC. And if you don't know what it is, you should. So, Greg, let's start off with talking about this credit card debt versus emergency savings. Define this for me. When we're talking about credit card debt, are we talking about revolving credit card debt? And when we talk about emergency savings, define that for us.
Sure. And thank you, Shirley, for having me back. It's always a pleasure. Yes, credit card debt, we're talking specifically about the balance that you're revolving on that credit card. Not necessarily, the balance you're going to pay off at the end of the month, but the balance that you've been revolving from one month to the next. And emergency savings is, this is your rainy day fund. This is the money that you can get to in the event that the car breaks down, that the roof springs a leak, that you have a sudden medical expense, or just, you have an opportunity. You get an invitation or an opportunity to go somewhere, and it means buying a plane ticket, kind of last minute. It's the money that absorbs that expense. So the emergency fund is your rainy day fund. It's that money that we all need. I call it sleep at night money. It's the money that helps you sleep at night knowing that you're covered in the event unplanned expenses arise, because those unplanned expenses, they are inevitable.
Unfortunately, you're so right. But now this contrast of the credit card debt level, is that more than we're normally as Americans been carrying in the past? Or is it just that it's alarming as compared to the emergency savings?
It's alarming as compared to the emergency savings. And the problem here, Shirley, is the fact that people are undersaved. The one area that where consumers have made progress, pretty notable progress, since the financial crisis in terms of their own finances is on the debt front. They've refinanced debt, they've paid down debt, they've paid off debt, and in particular, a lot of credit card debt, as people have really made some progress on paying that down. So that being said, we still haven't seen this number change very much over the last several years, and it's a function of not their credit card debt, but how undersaved they are. So we find that, as you noted at the top, about one in four Americans, 24%, actually has more credit card debt than they do emergency savings. An additional 13% don't have either one, which is, to me, is very problematic, because it means they don't have any savings.
Well, that means they're not establishing a line of credit for future use.
Well, no, that just means they don't have credit card debt. You don't have to carry debt to establish credit.
So they pay it off or whatever. Okay.
Exactly. But not having any savings is problematic. And we find that the people that are in the position you'd like to see, those that have more money in their emergency savings than they do in credit card debt, it's 58%. And, some people say, well, that's great. I'm like, well, yeah, but we'd really like to see that number a lot higher than 58%. And the fact is that the progress on that over the last several years has been pretty minimal. 58% is the best reading we've gotten on that in the last several years that we've been asking this question, but it's not much better. So the price just illustrates that the progress on the savings front for the vast majority of consumers has been very slow over the past several years.
Well, this really means that some people with one little hiccup in their well-being, and I don't physically or financially, could be facing really catastrophic issues.
So they could be in a tough spot, no doubt about it. The problem of not having savings is that you are more reliant on things like high-cost debt, such as credit cards, to absorb that expense. That's another beautiful thing about having some money tucked away, is that it's your buffer between you and high interest rate debt when those unplanned expenses arise. And so, when we see that 13% of people don't have any credit card debt, but they don't have any savings either. You know, the concern there is they don't have any savings.
Yeah.
And so even if they have a credit card with no debt on it, if they don't have any savings, any unplanned expense means, guess what? That unplanned expense is going on the credit card, and now all of a sudden they have credit card debt. And then the 24% who already have more credit card debt than emergency savings, that's troubling because their situation is such that when the next unplanned expense arises, not only do they may not have enough savings to absorb it, but they've used up a lot of their available credit by carrying that credit card balance. So, mm-hmm. you know, that one is almost a double whammy.
Well, now, do you think this is a product of the Depression that we went through, or is this a trend? I mean, I've interviewed people over the years, and one of the major concerns has always been that Americans don't save enough money.
Right, yeah, absolutely agreed. We have a long-held tradition in this country of being very good spenders, not very good savers. And, you know, that really caught up with us as a society during the financial crisis. And we have seen, in a positive step, we have seen where consumers have reprioritized savings. They now recognize how important it is, that there is no substitute for it. And, you know, just that, unfortunately, people have made very little progress in that direction. So savings is really the Achilles heel of financial security. It's the one area where month in, month out, year in, year out, we're finding that consumers say they're not comfortable with what they have. If anything, they feel as if their savings situation has deteriorated because their expenses keep going up, their pay isn't, and therefore neither is that savings cushion. So that savings cushion is just covering less and less of their monthly expenses in the event of a job loss, and so that's undermining any feelings of security people might have by having some money tucked away.
Now let's just make clear, your emergency savings are different from owning a house, from having an IRA or any other kind of retirement account. You're talking about money that can be liquidated easily.
Yes, liquidated easily and ideally without any risk of investment loss. So money in a savings account, money in a money market account, you know, even money in a checking account, although that's not the best place to keep it. It's money that you can get to at a moment's notice, and you're not at the whim of financial markets. If you put $1,000 away, it's going to be $1,000 whenever you need it. And those are really your requirements, is liquidity and the risk-free nature. In other words, that you're not risking your principal, that when you put money away, you know that you're going to have that amount sitting there should the time arise where you need it.
If you're going to need it, yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know that they're tuned in to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Greg McBride. He's Bankrate.com's chief financial analyst, and we're talking about a recent study which had some alarming numbers that Americans, 24% of them, that's a quarter of us practically, have more credit card debt than emergency savings, and that means all kinds of things for financial stability, and it raises a lot of alarms. Well, Greg, how do you see, as a society, we can move more towards, is it going to require education? Because I believe from your study that the group that's really in the most peril here is our younger population, the 30 to 49.
They are. They were, of all age groups, they were in the worst shape. They were more likely than any other age group to have more credit card debt than emergency savings. They were also the least likely to have more savings than credit card debt. And, you know, the ages between 30 and 49, I mean, you know, it's understandable. I mean, those are the years where, those are the child-rearing years, the years where you've got the mortgage payment, the car payments, all the expenses that come with raising kids, tuition payments, things like that. In a time when, in recent years, we haven't seen wage growth. We haven't seen, and certainly haven't seen it in terms of actual buying power. So we've seen where people just get squeezed a little bit more each year because their expenses go up. Their income may or may not keep pace with that. But as a result, they're not able to make any headway on savings. And if there has been some headway, we've seen people make headway on paying down debt, but not on boosting the savings. And so, you know, that tight household budgets are a real issue. It's one of the reasons why the economy is growing so slowly. especially during this economic recovery, is that people don't have extra money to throw around. And the poster children for that are, you know, those between the ages of 30 and 49, and that's certainly borne out in our results.
Do you think that we need to do a better job in educating kids early on about the value of savings?
Yeah, more can't hurt, no doubt about it. But, you know, I don't think it's limited to kids.
No, it's not limited to kids, that's for certain.
Yeah, but I'm just, you know, big advocate of you know, having additional financial literacy at all ages. So, yeah, I'm of the opinion that more is always better. But, you know, it's the old, you could lead the horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
Right.
And so there's plenty of information available for people that are willing to go look for it. Case in point, I work for a website where we have information that's available free of charge to consumers on virtually any personal finance topic they may need. And there's a lot of people here that work really, really hard to make sure that consumers have that information available. But if you don't take the initiative to go out and seek out that information so you can make an informed financial decision, you know, then shame on you, because the information is out there. It's easier than ever to get the information that you need to make informed decisions in all aspects of life, but, you know, finances in particular.
Well, I do find that your website is extremely useful, and for our listeners, it's bankrate.com. And go in and search for whatever information you want, what you're looking for. You can find studies. You can find all kinds of useful consumer information. It's really quite an extensive website, Greg.
Well, thank you. Yes, it is. As I said, you know, we pretty much cover it sideline to sideline in terms of personal finance. So any particular topic or transaction you're entering into, if you need information, it doesn't matter how basic the information you need, we have it on our site. And, you know, it's really geared to help, you know, sort of hold the consumer's hand and help them through the process, giving them the information that they need to educate themselves, giving them access to the calculators that they need to kind of run the numbers on their situation, and then helping them shop around and find the most competitive quotes mm-hmm. for whatever financial product it is that they're looking for.
Well, you do a lot of studies simply because it serves your base, your consumer base, well. And it also serves people like me well, because it alerts us to what's going on out there in the financial world that we may not be aware of. And I certainly had no idea about the credit card debt versus the emergency savings that people have. And I find that a little bit alarming, because credit card debt sometimes can be very hard to pay off because of the interest rates that you have to pay. So I guess one thing for people who are carrying a heavy credit card debt to see if they can refinance that debt onto a newer, lower-cost credit card?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you have good credit, now is the time to act, because there are still a lot of 0% offers out there geared for people that have good credit. They're good. They're offered as introductory rates on purchases, as well as for balance transfers. And some of these extend to 18 months, 21 months. So giving you a long window of time where you're not paying any interest, so that you can really work at paying down that balance. And I think the time to act on that is now, because as people may have been hearing, you know, we're getting closer and closer to the point in time where the Federal Reserve is going to start raising interest rates. And when they do, the credit card issuers are going to do the same. So as the Federal Reserve starts to move away from 0% interest rates eventually, credit card issuers will follow suit. So those 0% offers out there today that are so compelling and I think so helpful to disciplined consumers that want to pay off their debt, they're not going to be around that much longer either. So now would be the time to jump on it. But, you know, regardless of where you fall on the credit spectrum, by all means, shop around for a better rate. Keep in mind, you'll typically pay a balance transfer fee of about 3%, but reducing that rate in a significant fashion is really a nice boost to your debt repayment efforts.
So are there some things that consumers should particularly look out for, Greg? Or is that something you can speak to when you're looking around and shopping for a new credit card?
I think it's It really pays to know where you fall on the credit spectrum just so you can sort of set expectations. And by that, I mean consumers that have good credit, they're the ones that are in the position to score the best terms, those 0% offers that I mentioned, those other low-rate offers. Even if you're not somebody that carries credit card debt, the most attractive rewards programs are geared for consumers that have the best credit. So, whereas on the other hand, those that have marginal credit that have had some slow pay, some delinquencies or defaults, they're going to pay higher rates. The offers they're going to get aren't as attractive. But nonetheless, it may still be better than what you're paying right now, and so by all means, shop around. I did mention that you will have oftentimes a balance transfer fee when you do transfer a balance to the card, and it's typically about 3%. You certainly want to factor that into your decision. You want to make sure you're reducing your interest rate more than 3 percentage points, and hopefully a lot more than that to really provide some oomph to those debt repayment efforts.
So really, the key here is to sit down and do some real hard analysis of where you are and what might be available to you depending upon your credit rating in terms of getting a new card and transferring that money, that debt, to a new card. What about the idea of taking out a loan that would be at a lower interest rate than what you're paying on a revolving account credit card?
Well, I mean, first off, I don't think it takes hard analysis. I think, for example, we have all the tools that a consumer would need at Bankrate.com. We have a balance transfer calculator, so you can look and see, is that balance transfer going to make sense for you? What's it going to cost? We have other debt repayment calculators that can help you map out a game plan for paying down your debt. And then we have a free search engine where you can shop around for credit cards that are geared for consumers of your credit rating. So, I don't think it takes hard analysis.
You're right.
People off of it. I think that a lot of those tools are readily available, but nonetheless, utilize them so that you can make the best decision. So address your question about taking out loans.
Hang on a minute, Greg, and let me just, excuse me for interrupting you, but I need to let our listeners know that they're tuned in to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Greg McBride, who is the Chief Financial Analyst for Bankrate.com. We're talking about saving you some money. Go for it, Greg.
Well, you'd ask the question about, does it make sense to take out a loan at a lower rate to pay off credit card debt? And that can be a good move. It can be a bad move. But whether it's a good or a bad move really is going to depend on the person you see when you look in the mirror. And by that, I mean, if you consolidate debt at a lower interest rate, yes, that can be helpful to your debt repayment efforts. The less you're paying in interest, the more that goes towards principal. And this can really snowball and accelerate the timetable for getting things paid off, as long as you don't go out and run up the credit card debt all over again.
The
big picture is this is a two-step process. Mm-hmm. People say, well, should I consolidate my debt? Well, that's the first step of a two-step process. So when I said it can be a good idea or it can be a bad idea, it's a bad idea if you only complete the first step. It's
gotcha.
A good idea if you complete both steps, that second step being then using that lower rate to accelerate your debt repayments. People that do debt consolidations and then go back out and run those credit cards up all over again, in that case, debt consolidation was a bad idea.
Well, they'd be worse off.
More debt.
Right. They'd be worse off than when they started. Exactly.
Exactly. So, I think it takes a good, long, hard look in the mirror, and you've got to know and assess whether or not you're going to have the discipline to follow through on that all-important second step. Because if not, all you're doing is just moving the money around.
Right, and making it for future grief, actually. All right, let's change the subject here and talk about something I mentioned briefly at the intro, and that is something called HELOC, Home Equity Line of Credit. Now, as I understand it from information I received from Bankrate.com, the rules are changing in this particular financial area. Tell me about that, Greg.
Well, it's not that the rules are changing. I think what's important for people to know is if you took out a home equity line of credit during the go-go days of the housing boom, your loan, that home equity line that gives you so much flexibility of when you can borrow and how much to repay, that flexibility only lasts for typically 10 years. That's known as the draw period. And then at the end of that 10 years, it's time to pay the piper. So the balance you have, you not only can you not add to it by borrowing more money, but you got to start paying it back. And what happens is that a lot of people have been skating by on interest-only payments during that draw period. You know, they took out the home equity line during the housing boom, whether it was for home improvements or just frivolous spending, whatever the case may be. But they stacked a large balance on this home equity line, and over the last 10 years, they haven't made much in the way of progress on paying it back. Well, now, at the end of that 10-year period, it's going to be time to start paying that back. And that interest-only payment now becomes a payment where you have to pay both interest and principal. And it can lead to some significant payment increases. And the risk here is people get blindsided by this and don't recognize that the change is coming. And worse, people that are not only blindsided by it, but in a position where they can't afford those higher payments, and they may or may not be in a position where they have other alternatives available to them. So this is going to be an issue, Shirley, this year, next year, and into 2017. I mean, the OCC estimates we're looking at about $40 to $50 billion worth of home equity lines resetting each year for the next few years. So there are a lot of people that are going to be in this position. Many of them are going to be fine. They'll be able to handle it. They may even be prepared for it. It's the people that aren't prepared for it, that don't know it's coming. Those are the people I worry about, and those are the people I'm talking to now, in the sense that that's why we put out that information, is because if you know something is coming and you have time to plan for it, your odds of success go way up. Mm-hmm. And so we feel this is a really important issue that people need to be cognizant of so that they don't end up behind the eight ball.
So in other words, it's people who took out these loans and they've forgotten that they're going to have to pay the piper at the end of that 10-year period.
Exactly.
Everything is going to suddenly become principal as well as interest. So, and they have been riding and enjoying almost not free money, but at a lot lower payment schedule. So they really, it's important to sit down and look at that loan and figure out when it is going to come due. Right?
Absolutely. Yep, exactly. And just to kind of put some numbers on this to illustrate, I mean, if you're talking about somebody with a $30,000 balance on their home equity line of credit, the difference between that the interest-only payment, they've been paying about $81 a month, give or take, depending upon their specific interest rate. But, in this example, if your rate is the same rate as the prime rate, you've been paying about $81 a month. Well, at the point where that recasts into a principal and interest payment, it more than doubles. Now your payment's going to be $170 a month.
Wow. And
this is at a time when, as we know, as we were talking about a few minutes ago, household budgets are tight. Income growth just hasn't been there for so many Americans. And to be able to cobble together that additional money every single month to make that payment could cause some distress. And so, again, your odds of success go way up if you know this is coming and you have time to plan accordingly.
And there's no way that you can get another home equity loan?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, there are other options here. I mean, you're not necessarily a sitting duck for this. You've got a few options, one of which is mortgage rates are really low right now. We're at the lowest level in about 2 years on mortgage rates. So a lot of people may be looking at refinancing their mortgage in the first place. So when you're doing that, you could potentially lump in that home equity line along with the refinancing. Mm-hmm. And now you've locked in a fixed rate on all of your home borrowing.
And that would give you a little bit more level of comfort, wouldn't it? Certainly. We're just about out of time. Get another 20 seconds.
Well, the other option, refinance the home equity line of credit, which just restarts the clock on that draw period. And if you can't do either one of those, contact your servicer and see if they can make sort of arrangements by stretching out the repayment period.
Greg, thank you so much for giving us such valuable information. You've been listening to, my guest has been Greg McBride. He is the chief financial analyst for Bankrate.com. And you have been listening to Off Consuming Interest right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And remember, all of these tools and everything are available at Bankrate.com. And if you're interested in the HELOC, HELOC, for example, there's a press release there that you can find that gives you more information on it. So bankrate.com. Again, Greg, thank you for being with us. Our listeners have been tuned into Of Consuming Interest right here in Federal News Radio 1500. I'm Shirley Rooker. You can reach me at shirley@callforaction.org. Thank you.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WUSA 9 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.